Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Bo Beasley, and he'll be answering your questions on healing waters. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Bo a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use the hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it while you're listening to the show. We'd really appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Bo Beasley about healing waters. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Bo, I'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at AskAboutFlyFishing.com, and look for the link under tonight's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Bo's latest book, Healing Waters, and here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show, and the question will be about something that Bo and I have talked about during the show. Just submit your name, answer, and your location on that text box on our homepage, and you'll be the proud winner of Bo's latest book, Healing Waters. So listen closely, take notes, type fast, and hopefully you'll be the winner. Our guest tonight is Bo Beasley. Bo has fished the waters of Virginia for over 35 years, with his travels taking him from the briny waters of the Chesapeake Bay, seeking stripers, to the cold water trout streams of the Shenandoah National Park in search of native brookies. His writing career began in the mid-1990s with a small article in Virginia Outdoor Weekly and has since been published in American Angler, Mid-Atlantic Fly Fishing Guide, Virginia Sportsman, Richmond Magazine, the Baltimore Sun, and Flytire. His work has also appeared in Virginia Wildlife, Blue Ridge Outdoors, Trout, and On the Fly. He's also known for his investigative work on public access and use and specialized in determining river bottom ownership. His latest investigative article on access was on the New York Delaware River and appeared in Fly Fisherman. Bo is the director of the Virginia Fly Fishing and Wine Festival and retired as a career captain with the Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department, where he as assigned to Engine Company 27. His first book, Fly Fishing Virginia, A No-Nonsense Guide to Top Waters, was released in May of 2007. His second book, Fly Fishing Mid-Atlantic, was published in 2011. And his latest book, Healing Waters, Veteran Stories of Recovery in Their Own Words, was released in 2023. Bo, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, thank you so much, Roger. I enjoyed being here tonight.
Good, good, good. Well, lots of things to share tonight. Tonight's a bit different, not one of our usual how-tos or where-to-go type shows, but it certainly involves fly fishers and their journeys and something we should all know and care about. So I'm anxious to get started here, but I don't know that everybody knows all about Healing Waters. So let's start there. Your book stems from Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing, which is an organization that helps veterans. Can you tell us how that came about and how it helps veterans?
Sure, I'll do my best. The book is about the time that I spent nearly a decade shadowing two programs in particular, and talks about Project Healing Waters and the veterans that are in the programs and how it helped them. But the genesis of this national nonprofit began in 2005 when Ed Nicholson, a retired Navy captain, went into Walter Reed Medical Center to have some cancer removed from the top of his head. And while he was in recovery, they were in the throes of Afghanistan and Iraq, and he woke up in a ward and saw dozens of other veterans that were much younger than him that were severely injured because of their service. And he just had the idea that he wanted to take a couple of them fly fishing. And maybe if he took them out fly fishing, it would kind of help take their mind off of their difficult situation they were in at the time. And at first, he really didn't have any takers. He had some suggestions of taking one of the guys out, and he joked that the first person he went to and spoke to about going wasn't interested, so he got ordered to go. He got voluntold, but the veteran really liked it, and the next thing you know, he was taking out two or three veterans and then more veterans, and then the colonel in charge of rehab there said, look, Ed, I really think that this, you know, could do a lot of people a lot of good, and here we are 20 years later, and I think there's more than 200 programs now in every state of the country, and it's just a marvelous organization. And, you know, the premise is that being out on the water and fly fishing just helps you connect to the outdoors and relax. And like the old adage, trout don't live in ugly places. Now, obviously, Project Healing Waters is all over the country, and they fly fish for many more species than just trout. But the idea was to just help the veteran get out of the place that they were in, which is generally a hospital, and just something as simple as walking out on the grass out in front of the hospital and casting a fly rod. And, Roger, I'm sure, you know, there have been days maybe when you couldn't get out on the water, but maybe you went in the backyard and cast it for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes just to feel the rod move, just to hear the line, just to be outside. And, you know, that's how it started. And he didn't have a how-to book. He just introduced people to fly fishing. And now it's one of the best-known nonprofits in the country with that, you know, that pairs up veterans and fly fishing. And it's miraculous to see how it works.
Yeah, now has that, a couple of questions then came in here on the internet from Phil McCartney in Kentucky. He says, has there been recognition from physicians that Healing Waters can have a positive impact on the lives of participants? And what is done to see that healing extends to life away from the water? Do you find that happening?
That's a great question. And what I would say is there have been more than one study done that talks about the healing powers of water. Matter of fact, I had one veteran say to me, he joked that his doctor wrote him a prescription to go fly fishing. So, yes, there have been medical studies that say, yes, you know, the body releases endorphins and releases natural painkillers when they're outside and engaged in some kind of activity like fly fishing. And to be honest, I think, you know, the same thing would be true for hunters, right? Maybe, you know, for some people, I know guys that I was in the fire department, they were really in the archery and being out in the woods in the quiet, and they would, you know, practice shooting their arrows or whatever the technical part is, but just being in the outdoors and connected with nature and just being quiet. You know, we're in an environment now, and I'm just as guilty, maybe worse than the average person, but think about it, Roger. You got your cell phone, you got your computer, and between that computer and that cell phone, how many times a day do you check your email? How many times do you get a Facebook message? How many times does the phone ding? How many texts do you get? How many times do you find yourself scrolling and 20 minutes goes by and you don't even know what you're looking for? You just keep scrolling, right?
Yeah.
Project Healing Waters allows people to get outside and focus on the outdoors and get quiet. My good friend Eric Canfield, who runs Alter Fly Fishing, says that we need to get outside to be inspired by the awe, A-W-E, the awe of the outdoors, and to enjoy God's creation. And I think when you do that, when you take the time to get outside, it changes you.
Yeah.
It just flat out changes you. So when you think about the added benefit, the only thing better than going fly fishing is going fly fishing with a buddy. And
yeah.
I think that's kind of the icing on the cake, is that these men and women who were in uniform and served their country honorably come back, and sometimes they get beat up and they get banged up, and they have a hard time sometimes, not always, relating to people outside of the military. I can tell you, I spent 30 years in the fire department, and ironically, the fire department was so insular, we referred to everybody. If you weren't in the fire department, you were a civilian. But now listen to the irony of that, where we consider the military civilians because they're not firemen. Right. So, you know, a lot of these paramilitary organizations have a sense and a purpose and a rank structure, and it helps people kind of sort themselves. And I'm convinced one of the reasons why so many of these veterans trusted me to relay their story was that I'd spent 30 years in the fire department. And I am very quick to add that I would never in a million years compare myself to a veteran, because I've never been fired at.
Right. Right.
Been in a couple of dicey situations, but nobody's ever shot at me. Nobody's ever tried to kill me. So I can't even fathom what that's like. But, you know, when you're in a small group dynamic and you're on a shift for 24 hours at a time and you're in a pretty intense situation where people are dying or you run the risk of dying doing your job, it kind of breeds a little collegiality that doesn't lend itself to something else. So Project Healing Waters allows these veterans to get introduced to a great sport and to other people that are like-minded. And I think that's the magic. So yes, there is, you know, bona fide medical studies that have proven that being in the outdoors improves patient outcome. And I think it's open to anybody that's willing to give it a try.
Yeah. In my own world, when I go fly fishing, when I'm on the stream or down at the lake or wherever I'm at, it's funny, but I'm never thinking about anything else but, you know, the outdoors and what I'm doing, you know, not about business, not about family, not about all the things that, not about those text messages or emails or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. It's like it removes you from the rest of the world and creates this new world where it's relaxing and pleasurable and enjoyable. And like you said, when you have I imagine a lot of these, well, you can explain this here in a second, but even when I go with my buddy and he says, well, I'm going up river. And I said, I'm going down river. You know, you might not even see each other for a few hours, you know, but it still feels good. It still feels good. Yeah. So.
Right. And you've got somebody to share that experience with, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. We were talking with friends the other day and I said, you know, I don't know. I mean, most of the time, well, I have to say all the, to this point in my life, every time I've gone traveling or fishing on any trips, it's always with somebody. And I can't imagine going by myself too much, because who would I tell later? Who would I reminisce with, you know? So, yeah. Phil had another question here. He said, how are the people chosen who help teach as part of Healing Waters? What training are the instructors given, if any?
Well, you know, I don't know. That would be a question you'd have to refer to your regional program lead or regional coordinator. Each state has a program or has multiple, like in Virginia, there must be 20 programs in Virginia based on population. Just so I honestly do not know what kind of training the instructors get. My book is about individual veterans assigned to different programs. But all I can say is, while there are people that are officially trained, the great thing about Project Healing Waters is everybody wants to help everybody else. So people are willing to share the information that they have. And one of the coolest things is, in the military, rank is a big deal. In Project Healing Waters, it's completely irrelevant. It is absolutely irrelevant. You might have a corporal teaching a colonel what to do about how to tie a certain fly, because it's not about rank, it's about skill. And I have seen, I've been out before with Admiral in the Coast Guard, and you could hang him up by his thumbs and fillet him before he would tell you that he's an admiral, because he's just not going to talk about it. And it's not relevant. Everybody there wants to share the knowledge and the opportunities that they had and try to pay it forward. So while I'm sure there is official training for program leads and stuff like that, to be honest with you, I'm not aware of it. It's probably in their training manual somewhere.
I'm
But the
sure they're
point
always
is,
looking for.
anybody who wants to get involved, just contact their local program, and if they don't know, just go to the Project Healing Waters website and send an email, call headquarters and say, hey, this is where I'm at. Or I'm sure you can find on the website the program that's closest to you, and then just send them an email and say you want to get involved, and they'll follow up with you.
Sure, I'm sure they're always looking for more volunteers
Sure.
and happy to have anybody that wants to help. Okay, so let's start talking about your book. How did your book, Healing Waters, come to be?
Well, I have a friend named Alan Folger, and Alan is a very, very talented artist out of North Carolina, and he illustrated my book, Fly Fishing in the Mid-Atlantic. His artwork is all over it, and he called me up, ironically, the day the book came out, the Mid-Atlantic, and we're looking at it and looking at his artwork, and he said, oh, I've got an idea for your next book. I said, Alan, you got to be out of your mind. I just finished a book. I'm not starting another one. He goes, no, I've got a great idea for your next book. And I said, all right, I'm listening. He said, you ought to write about Project Healing Waters. I said, that ain't happening. But no way. I'm not doing that. I said, I can't. I said, that would be like writing a real book. I said, I do guidebooks, right? Here's the map. Here's where you park. Here's the three kinds of species of fish that are there. Here's the closest fly shop. Here are two or three guides. Here's the flies I use. Next page, next river, next description. And you fish it a couple times and you photograph it, and then that's it. I said, man, there's no way I could write a human interest book, because that's what you're talking about. I said, I don't have that ability. And he kept calling me, and he kept calling me, and he kept calling me. And he kept it up for over a year. He would call me about once a month. And one day I was at work and phone rang, and I saw that it was Alan, and he said, have you started yet? And I said, no, Alan, I haven't started, and I'm not going to start. And it was quiet on the phone. I didn't hear anything. I said, did you hear me? He said, yeah, I heard you, Bo. He said, but here's the deal. Sooner or later, they're going to quit fighting in Afghanistan, and they're going to quit fighting in Iraq, and they're going to forget all about these people. And you can't let that happen. Now, that really struck me because I knew Alan's backstory. Alan served in Vietnam. And when it came time for Alan to come home, the mainstream media had done such a phenomenal job of demonizing the American soldier that they were under orders that as soon as they landed in the United States, the first civilian airport they got to, they were under orders to go to the bathroom and take off their uniform and put on civilian clothes to keep from being accosted by the public. That's how hostile it was for our veterans that came back from Vietnam. Now, they weren't in charge of the war. They were in charge of fighting the war. But they didn't volunteer to go. They were told. And then they followed orders. And then their reward for following orders was to be demonized by the media. So Alan knew what it was like to come back and not fit in and not know how to deal with the things that he had saw and been forced to do. So that really, it really bothered me. And it really, I'm like, well, man, I don't know how to answer that. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, Alan, I'll talk to my wife and my publisher and we'll take it from there. And he said, okay. Well, that was my get out of jail free card, because my wife edits everything I write. And she's a phenomenal editor. The truth of the matter is, when I go somewhere, if I'm autographing books or I'm giving a talk or somebody comes up to me and says, oh, I read your article in Fly Fisherman, or I saw that piece in Fly Tire on so-and-so, I always tell them the same thing. If you saw it in the original crayon before my wife edited it, you would be nearly as impressed, right? So my wife edits everything that I write, which is why I get so much published, because she's a professional editor. And so I said, well, she's not going to agree to do this. So I went home and I got off duty the next morning, and I went home and I said, well, here's my idea. It's not even my idea. It's Alan Folger's idea. And much to my surprise, she said, well, I think that's a great idea. I said, what? Oh, yeah, I know how much you love veterans. I know how much you like fly fishing. I think it's a great idea. You absolutely should do it. I was completely floored. And I thought, well, I'm still good, because my publisher is not going to put up the money for this, right? This is not a guaranteed sell book. This is a human interest story, and it's not going to help people sell gear. It's not going to help people sell trips. So fly shops aren't as likely to have it, to carry it, and I don't think my publishers want to put up all the money. So I called my publisher, Howard Fisher, phenomenal guy, and he was easier. He said yes faster than my wife did. And I said, Howard, why are you willing to do this and put up all this money? Because I made it clear that Project Healing Waters, I did not want them to have to invest a dime in the book. Plus, I wanted them to be beneficiary of royalties, which he agreed to, and I had written into my contract. That he's like, no. He said, I'm a volunteer at Fort Huachuca in Arizona. I'm already volunteering for Project Healing Waters. So, yeah, we're going to do this book. So I was totally flabbergasted that both my wife, who is the better part of the family by a long shot, and my publisher were both all for it, despite the fact I didn't have a clue. I didn't know what I was doing. And I thought, well, I guess we'll give this a try. And I started. I had no idea. Roger, you know as much as I do. When I did this book, you had just as much idea as I did. I had no idea what I was doing. And and Ed Nicholson called me about 6 months into the project. And he said, remember, he's the founder. He said, Bo, how'd you like to go to the Middle Fork of the Salmon River in Idaho for a week and go fishing? And that sounds good. And he said, well, we'd go here and there. And I'm kind of hemming and hawing and not really committing. And he goes, Bo, I don't understand. What's the problem? I said, well, Ed, you know, I got a wife and two kids and, you know, I run a fly fishing festival and I'm writing for three or four magazines and I'm really busy. But to be honest, Ed, I can't afford it. There's no way I can pay to fly to Idaho and go on one of these all-inclusive trips on the river in the, you know, the George Marshall Forest. You know, river of no return. I said, I can't afford that. And I don't know if you've ever heard what a Navy captain sounds like that's angry, but you don't want to ever hear that, right? And he said, son, I didn't ask you if you could afford it. I asked if you wanted to go. And I said, well, yes, sir, I'd like to go. He said, fine. I'm going to email you a date. And you arrange your schedule, and all you have to do is show up at Dulles Airport. You show up at Dulles Airport, I'll take it from there. So that's exactly what I did. And Project Healing Waters at that time flew me out to Idaho like they did all the other veterans. And we met. It was about 12 or 14 of us. And our first night, we stayed in a hotel and we all had, you know, two to a room. And my roommate was Brian Mancini. And Brian was a staff sergeant in the Army and had been a combat medic. And it did not go wasted on me. It did not pass my observation that Ed Nicholson had managed to put me with another medic. So what do you think happened? When you put two medics together, what do you think they talk about? They talk about medic stuff. So I was still very much involved working full-time for the fire department as a supervisor on a mobile intensive care unit. And I had been probably, been in the department at least close to 20 years by then, maybe a little longer than that. And he started telling me what it was like to be in the Army and what he had seen. And I'd say, well, you know, one time I went to a car wreck and I had these three people and I did this, this, and that. And one time I had a guy with his leg was cut in half, and I'm talking about that. I mean, we're talking shop, basically. But it dawned on me, not long into the conversation, that I was out of my depth, that I was with a medic that had been there and done that. And one of the huge differences between me and Brian was nobody was trying to kill me while I was doing my job. And what more intense was Brian was working on people that he knew. Yeah. Brian was working on people that he had a relationship with. And that's much, much harder, obviously. So what happened was he started telling me about some of the things that he had seen and he had done and he'd been required to do as a medic. And it was very, very moving. And at one point he said to me, Bo, he suffered a traumatic brain injury and lost the use of his eye and had several medical problems. He was probably on about 10 different medications when I met him. And he said, during my service, I lost my health, I lost my wife, and I've lost my career. What else do I have to give up in the service of my nation? And, man, I didn't know what to say. I was just flabbergasted. And we'd been in the hotel room together about 2 hours talking nonstop, so it's pretty intense. And in that moment when he said that to me, I lost my wife, I lost my health, I lost my career. What else do I have to give up in the service of my nation? I realized how much some Americans give up for other Americans, how much these servicemen and women sacrifice for the rest of us to be free. And that was hard. It was hard to hear that, you know.
Yeah.
The following morning, we all went out together, flew out on another, drove out to a remote area. Actually, we flew out like on a little Cessna. And then we all got together by the river. And there's about, like I said, about anywhere from 14 to 18 of us. I can't remember right now. And they're all going around introducing themselves. Hi, I'm Joe Blow. I was a Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps. You know, my name's Fred. I was a Lieutenant Commander assigned to a submarine, blah, blah, blah. So they're all going around introducing themselves. Well, I'm in the fire department, and I've got a haircut that's as buzz as anybody else there. There's no way you can look at me and not think that I'm not in the military. Matter of fact, I'm 59. I have a buzz haircut right now. It's just the culture of the fire department. And so it came time for me to speak. And I said, my name's Bo Beasley. I'm a lieutenant, but I'm with Fairfax County Fire Department. And I was kind of kicking around at the gravel because I was really self-conscious. And I'll never forget, this service member walked up to me, and he could tell I was really uncomfortable. He walked up to me and he put his arm around me and he said, it's okay. He said, you're just like us, except you serve at home. And I said, well, no, I'm not like you. I really appreciate you saying that, but I'm not like you. Nobody's shooting at me at work. And I'm not gone for half a year at a time. I work 24 hours and then I come home. I said, I'm not in y'all's league. But I knew then, at that moment, I knew then that I was going to be accepted by the people that were in that group and in Project Healing Waters broadly. And I spent a week there on that river, and I remember Ed saying to me when I was hesitant about going, he said, Bo, you really need to go on this trip, because it's often on these trips that you see the magic happen. And what he meant when he said the magic happened, you watch people progress. The man or the woman that's really quiet in the beginning, maybe doesn't look anybody else in the eye, maybe only talks to one or two people. By the end of the week, everybody knows everybody. And they've shared part of their soul and their experience. And don't get me wrong, nobody says that you can go to Project Healing Waters for 20 years. What you'll never hear is, okay, it's therapy time. Let's all get together and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. That's not happening. Nothing's forced. Nothing's mandatory except being safe, right? They're very safety conscious. Beyond that, they just want you to be available and be authentic, and the rest of it takes care of itself. So I spent a week there, you know, made some great friendships that I still have to this day, and stayed in touch with Brian, and he was doing well, and he got a service dog. As a matter of fact, he started his own nonprofit for a short period of time out in Arizona. Saw him a little.
Yeah, Bo, let's save that for, I need to take a quick break here, but we'll talk about Brian right after the break here, okay?
Okay.
And you can tell us more about Brian. But give me 30 seconds, and then we'll be right back. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. That's the uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Bo Beasley about Healing Waters. If you'd like to ask Bo a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Bo, before we get back and start talking about some of the stories you've collected, including Brian, tell us a little bit about what's going on in your fly fishing world, because you're involved in a lot of things here. So tell us what's happening.
Well, for me personally, I'm doing some research on some articles that I'll be writing about river bottom ownership in a couple of different states. I do a lot of investigative work, what I call conservation investigative work. I'll have an angler from a state call me and say, hey, I'm fishing in this river. I'm being approached by a landowner, and he says he owns the river and I have to leave, but the state tells me that they own the river and I don't have to leave. And, you know, I can't get any straight answers out of anybody. How do I know if I'm trespassing or not? And I do research on that, and I'm specialized in trying to help determine what's public property and what's not. I'm not an attorney, don't claim to be an attorney, but I've gotten resolution in quite a few places. I've written about Virginia's crown grant laws in Virginia. I've written about Tennessee. I've written about Georgia. I've written about New York. I've written about North Carolina. So that's an interesting thing that I do that takes a lot of time, and I'm ruthlessly impartial. It doesn't matter to me whether it's public property or whether it's private property. I just want to try to get clarity. So I am just as eager to defend a landowner's private property rights as I am to make sure that the public has access to public property. And I really go out of my way to be impartial. And I'll have people call me and say, well, you know, you're a fly angler like I am, and, you know, you should take my side. I said, I'm not interested in taking your side. I'm interested in the truth. And if the truth makes you look bad, then I'm going to write about it. And if the truth exonerates you, I'm going to write about that. And if the landowner's right, I'm going to back the landowner. And I've taken a lot of heat for that.
Yeah,
but for me, you know, it's about clarity. And what does the law say? And whether we like it or not is irrelevant. Because here's the deal. We live in the greatest country on earth. If you don't like the law, you can change it.
Right.
Everybody has a boss, right? You can appeal to somebody. So, you know, one day I'll be talking to a game warden. Another day I'll be talking to an angler. The next day I'll be emailing with a district attorney or whatever. And, you know, if you come across as impartial, you're much more likely to get the information that you need. So, and sometimes it's really boring, like tax records or trying to look up a deed or something like that. But when I write about super contentious stuff, and I do, you got to be right.
Yeah.
You have to be right. So that, and the other thing is, I'm about 6 weeks away or 5 weeks away from the Virginia Fly Fishing and Wine Festival, which is a real passion of mine. This year, it's January 10th and 11th. It's in Doswell, Virginia, which is just outside of Richmond, the state's capital. And we'll have about 90, 95 vendors there and about two dozen instructors. You know, we'll cover everything from basic casting to how to read the water, right? We've got people like Tom Rosenbauer and Josh Miller and Captain Gary Dubiel, Callie Freeman, Jen Ripple. There'll be a lot of people there in the fly fishing industry that are well known and well respected, and then people like me, not as much respected, but I'll be there too talking.
Okay.
And
how do people find out about that? Where do they go?
They can go to our website, which is www.va, which is the abbreviation for the state of Virginia, vaflyfishingfestival.org. vaflyfishingfestival.org. You just go to the website, and the cool thing is you pay your admission fee, and included with all the fly fishing vendors and instructors, we have 10 wineries and 3 distilleries. And the wine tastings and the bourbon tastings are included with your admission fee.
Oh, nice.
So it's easy to bring your better half with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. And what about your personal website? Can people follow you there?
Sure. Yeah. My website is my name, Beau, BEAUBEASLEY.com. So they can just go to BeauBeasley.com and look at my website. And if they want to order any of my books or send me an email or whatever, they can contact me through the website.
Perfect. Perfect. Good. Good. Well, thanks for sharing that. We're going to have to probably keep these a little short. We've got about 5 stories we'd like to share with you folks tonight about veterans that Beau has interviewed and collected their story. Now, Beau, in your book, I don't know, there must be, 30 that you have in the book, something like that?
32.
Okay.
Yeah, 32.
Pretty close guess. Yeah, yeah. And then there were a bunch of stories that you weren't able to tell, right?
As I was saying, Brian, who I developed a strong relationship with on that first trip that I took, he got out of the service and medically retired, multiple injuries and medical issues. And I was, his very first trout he ever caught was on Rose River Farm in Virginia. And I've got a picture of him, you know, on the river there. Brian ended up moving out to Arizona. He started his own national nonprofit. He got a service dog, and I actually saw him on Oprah Winfrey, actually. Mm. He was had a guest appearance on there and was doing really, really well. And I kind of fell out of contact with him, and then I got a call about a year later that he killed himself. Mm-hmm. And it was a very hard thing for me to deal with. And I felt an immediate sense of guilt and shame because I hadn't stayed in touch with him as much as I would have liked to. But, of course, if I'd have known there was a problem, and that's part of the problem with people who are seriously injured is they get isolated. And when you get isolated, it's dangerous. And I don't know why Brian killed himself, but it hurt me. And we all know people who have made a difficult decision to end their life. And I tell people it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem, as a general rule. And So, the stat is 22 veterans a day. I'd like to think it's come down some, but I don't know. I haven't seen an updated number. But all of those veterans are real people, and we lost more people after the Iraq War was over than died in combat. And, you think, how is it that people can survive the battlefield and come home and kill themselves? And it's because they can leave the battlefield, but the battlefield doesn't leave them. And I dedicated this book to Brian and all the other Brians and Susans or Jessicas or whatever memory of the veteran you want to have, because I had the honor of interviewing multiple women too. I dedicated this book to him. And when the book came out, I still stay in touch occasionally with his father. His father got the very first book. So I wrote his father a letter and sent him a copy of the book. So the very first book off the publishing table went to Brian's father. And I just wanted to do that because the objective for the book was I wanted to honor Brian and the other men and women in the service that worked so hard and sacrificed so much to keep us free. And I wanted to raise the level of awareness for what they go through. I wanted to honor them and their service, and I wanted to help raise money for Project Healing Waters and to let people know that this resource is out there, and it's out there for anybody. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what branch of the service you are in. And there's a big misconception that the only people that are involved with Project Healing Waters are combat veterans, and that's not true. You can be any veteran at any age from any branch, and they're more than welcome to have you come in with open arms, right? Like I said, all they want you to do is to be safe and show up with the attitude of you want to learn. And it's phenomenal camaraderie, and there's nothing like it. The only
Yeah, I
thing I've
was
ever seen like it was my time in the fire department, because firefighters say things to each other that they won't say to other people, because you're basically living with each other, right? It's like an extended family.
Brothers and sisters.
Correct.
Um,
Exactly.
yeah, I noticed that, and we talked about this before the show about how a lot of the veterans in your book, you enlightened me, went from the Korean War to Afghanistan. So it's not just recent veterans we're talking about here. Tell us about Alvin Schell and how did you meet Alvin?
Alvin went to the program in Fort Belvoir, Virginia. I shadowed two programs. When I first started writing the book, as I said before, I didn't have any idea what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. And I wrote two or three narratives or four narratives, and I gave them to my wife, as I do, to get feedback, and I didn't hear anything from her. Like 3 days go by, and she didn't say anything. So finally, I asked her, I'm like, look, I sent you those narratives to read. What did you think? And she said, well, they're pretty good, which means it sucks. And I'm like, well, what's wrong? And she said, honey, I know you. I've been married to you for more than 25 years. I know how you're right. You don't know these people. I got really angry. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, you don't know them. I can read it and tell because I know how you write. You don't know these guys well enough. And I got very, very defensive, and I said, well, what am I supposed to do? I don't know what I'm doing. And she said, well, are there programs nearby? I said, yeah, there's a Fort Belvoir program in Alexandria, and there's a Marine Corps program, not a Marine Corps program, but a program on a Marine base in Quantico. And she said, well, stop writing. Don't write another word. Quit writing. Just start going to program meetings. Just be with these guys. Just kind of embed yourself and really, really, really get to know them, then write it. So that's what I did. And I met Alvin at the Fort Belvoir program. And I just want to say, when I first started, I went to the program leads at Fort Belvoir was Bob Gardner, And the other program leading to Quantico was Marty Laxberger, retired Marine, combat Marine, multiple tours. And Bob had worked for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Great guy. Both of those two people, I joke all the time that you could roll Bob and Marty around in flour and make leadership cookies. These guys were two of the best leaders I've ever seen. Fantastic leaders. Very selfless. And I had lunch with them. I told them what I wanted to do, and they said, okay, here's the deal. You can shadow us. You can come to as many program meetings as you want. You can come to as many outings as you want. No problem. But we have one rule. And I remember Marty Laxberg telling me this in his Marine Corps voice. We have one rule. And the one rule is the veterans come first. So as long as you don't get between us and the veterans, everything's going to be fine. If you get between us and the well-beings of these veterans, it won't be fine. And I'm like, okay, I got it. So all total, it took me 8 years. From the time of conception to the time of printing, it was almost nine, actually. And I didn't have a prescripted amount of people. I had no idea who I was going to write about. It would just come to me. And the hardest, the biggest challenge I had was none of them, not one, wanted to be written about. None of them. Not one. So I would say, hey, Roger, you know, I know you were in the Navy for 20 years, and I really enjoyed talking to you, and I know some of your backstory. I'd really like to write about you. No. Look, Roger, look, just let, no. Okay, look, let me interview you. Let me write your narrative in your voice, in your way, and I'm going to give you the narrative, and you're going to read it. And you're not going to have 80% control or 90% control. You're going to have 100% control. And nothing will go in this book that you don't know about ahead of time. And if you don't like it, at the end, we'll just take it out. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. But that took an enormous amount of effort because I'd have to get to know how the person. I'd have to interview them. Sometimes I have to interview them three times because they couldn't tell me everything in one interview. Then I would write the narrative, and then I would send it to them and say, is this right? Well, no, you know, I wasn't at Fort Lee then. I was at Fort, you know, Macon, you know, or Fort Lewis or whatever. So I'd have to go back and forth and change all that and back and forth and pass it back. So it was a very long process. But they,
I bet.
What I'm the most proud of is they're all real stories. There are no composite characters. They're all real people, and you get to see their pictures. And Alvin was a great guy and served in the United States Army and was burned severely in Iraq during a firefight, was involved in an explosion and burned about 80% of his body. And just an amazing, amazing human being. Was right-handed, but was burned so badly, had to learn how to shoot with his left hand. Now he's in law enforcement with the federal government. And the biggest concern that these veterans had was that I was going to lionize them, meaning they were very afraid that I was going to make them look better than they should. And I can assure you, I didn't hold a candle to what these people should have been written about, but they just would not let me. They were very transparent. I could fill up two more books about what I can't write about.
Right. How did, do you know how,
too intense.
Yeah. Do you know how Alvin got connected with Project Healing Waters?
Yeah. He heard about them. Mostly they hear about it through the VA, or they hear about it from a friend, or they see a poster somewhere on base, or they're in the Warrior Transition Unit and they find out about Project Healing Waters, and they just go to a meeting, or they go to a program. And sometimes some of them have been hospital-based, and they come, and maybe on the day that they're there, their time flies. And on a different day that they're there, they're learning how to build a fly rod. Or if it's in the spring, maybe they're out in front of the the USO building in Fort Belvoir casting a fly rod. They hear about it all kinds of different ways, and then they come in and get connected. They meet somebody, and they fall in love with fly fishing, and then they develop relationships. And the next thing they know, you know, they're going to a program meeting maybe once a month or maybe twice a month. Fort Belvoir actually meets once a week, and then they find they got about 25 brothers or sisters that have very similar issues. And they find they can get connected and share the sport of fly fishing at the same time. It's a pretty wonderful concept.
So you would go to the programs, meet these people, and approach them for an interview?
Yeah, but
Okay.
No, I would go on outings, and I would go to the program meetings. And they all knew that I wasn't a veteran. I mean, I didn't try to hide it. And I would just be with them. I would just be with them. And then, you know, I would say, you know, I think I want to interview this guy. Or somebody would tell me something. Well, I remember when I did this or that. And sometimes they would share one story and nothing else. And it's not like I can walk up to somebody and say, hey, Roger, tell me about the worst day of your life. Tell me about the day you lost your leg.
Right.
Tell me about the day your best friend died in front of you. It doesn't work that way. You have to earn that right. You have to earn that right. I, you know, have the honor. I mean, I've had men tell me stuff that had been married for 30 years that they hadn't told their wives. And I tell people it's the closest thing I've ever come to being a priest. And what I mean by that is not that they were confessing to me sins. That's not what I mean. What I mean is I was in what I would classically call a holy place. The word holy means separated, right? If something's holy, it's other. Well, these people are in a unique situation of being in the armed forces and being under tremendous stress. And unless you've been there and done that, you don't know what it's like. I mean, I can describe for you till I'm blue in the face what it's like to be in a burning building. But until you're on the floor crawling with me in a room at 1600 degrees, dragging a hose, going into a house, and you can't see your hand in front of your face, and all you can hear is the sound of the breathing apparatus of the person in front of you, I can describe it all I want. But once you go in, you know what it's like. And you can't unsee it. You can't un... I remember the very first training fire I went into where I opened up the hose line and it's about 1,800 degrees and, you know, you open up the hose and there's instant steam and you feel the pressure of that water converting to steam in that superheated environment, and you realize, oh, now I know what a lobster feels like. Except you got on, you know, state-of-the-art turnout gear, so you really don't know what it's like. But you can feel the heat, and you can feel the pressure. Well, these men and women have been in situations the rest of us can't even comprehend. So asking them to tell you about it is an arduous thing. And I was honored that they were willing to tell me.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I want to talk, have you tell us about Jessica Callahan here, but let me take a quick break, and when we come back, let's introduce us to Jessica, okay?
Sure.
All right. Discover the power of pure Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to heavy steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead trout or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit PierceGadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. That's PierceGadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Bo Beasley about healing waters. If you'd like to ask Bo a question, go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Okay. Just a quick one coming in on the Internet here, Bo. It says Phil, again, wrote in. He says, did Bo teach any of the Healing Waters participants how to fish? Were you involved in that?
Occasionally, I would go out and help. You know, everybody helps guide to one extent or another. I am not necessarily the best fly fishing guide, but yes, I've spent some time on the water. And, you know, sometimes in the very beginning, right, it's just simple, like trying to help people learn how to negotiate in waders and think about where
sure.
they're going to be fishing, right? It's not just, you don't just throw the fly out there any old place. You have to think, okay, where do I want this fly to eventually float to? How do I cast it? And it's just about spending time on the water and imparting whatever skill that you have and, you know, sharing what you know. Quite frankly, I learned as much from them as anything.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Jessica, because she was a bit different in that she was injured in combat, but yet she was injured.
No,
so you want to tell us her story?
Yes. Jessica, phenomenal young lady, just a one in a million. She grew up on a dairy farm, super smart. Got a full academic scholarship to West Michigan University, I believe. And she was in college when 9/11 happened. And although she had a full academic ride, she could not get the images of those planes going into the towers out of her head. And she ultimately walked away from her full scholarship and enlisted in the United States Navy and became an airman qualified to work on naval aircraft. And she got injured in a training event one day and injured her knee and her shoulder and her back. And what she thought was going to be a minor irritation, then, well, maybe it's going to be a major irritation and I'm going to be in the hospital for a little while, but eventually things are going to be fine. She ended up having 10 surgeries in 5 years. And just one thing after another. And before she was 21, she was in a wheelchair because she could not carry herself on crutches because of her shoulder injury. And she was eventually diagnosed with severe compartmental pain syndrome. And she really thought she was going crazy because she was trying to convince the people in the hospital that her legs were tingling or that she was really burning. And, of course, they interpreted that eventually or originally as, you know, her seeking pain medication. She didn't want pain medication. She just wanted not to hurt. And she was in a pretty desperate state. I mean, you can imagine, wrap your head around the fact, and I want you to think about this. You leave your college career, you join the military, and you are out and medically disabled before you're 21. Now, you wrap your head around that. You just think about that. You're 20. In a wheelchair. 18 months ago, you're running track. And now, you can barely make it across your living room floor. Well, fortunately for her, she came across a Coast Guard captain named John Miko. And John's a phenomenal guy, just a wonderful, wonderful person. And as most good leaders are, he's humble. He always refers to himself as a washed-up helicopter pilot, but he was a captain in the Coast Guard, and he told Jessica about Project Healing Waters. And she caught her first trout on the South Holston, and she said she knew then, as soon as I caught that trout, my life was going to change. And now, You know, she went from seriously contemplating suicide, which is a reoccurring theme in the book, to now she is happily married. She is a relatively new mama. I believe her baby's a little over a year old now. And just, you couldn't imagine a happier, more well-adjusted young adult woman than Jessica Callahan. She is wicked smart and very, very talented as an artist. And she shares her artwork with other veterans and with other people that often come to her studio. And Jessica is just you could strain 10,000 people and not find somebody like her. I'm not sure where she is now. I think the last time we corresponded officially, I think she was in Sweetwater, Tennessee. But that's the interesting thing about the book, is there are people all over the country. And the whole idea is to be available and mm-hmm. to show that the average normal person can do extraordinary things given the right set of circumstances and the support. But Jessica is just a prince of a human being. And I saw a picture just the other day she posted on Facebook with her and her baby. And her husband is just a great guy. And to see them, to be with these people over the years and watch them go from being very, I'm going to use this word, and I hope it doesn't offend anybody, but seeing someone who's fragile. Now, I can't think of a term any more opposite from warrior than fragile. But that's what happens. They go from being warriors to being fragile
mm-hmm.
to going back to being warriors.
Very good.
And, you know, that's what Project Healing Waters helps them do. But instead mm-hmm. of an M16, you know, it's a 9'5" weight.
Right, right.
You know, Jessica has fished all over the place. You know, I think I've got a picture in the book of her fly fishing in New Zealand. So it's
yeah.
it's just a marvelous opportunity for people. But I interviewed multiple women that are in the book. Jessica's just one of the
right.
one of them and a great friend.
Well, tell us about Jerry Miron. Is I guess that's how you pronounce his name. Miron.
Jerry Myron.
Myron.
Jerry.
Okay.
Yeah, Jerry. Great guy. Big hockey fan. Jerry was out walking with his mother on the 4th of July, 1967, came home, opened up the mail, and got a letter that said, "Greetings from the U.S. Army." And about 6 weeks later, he was drafted and in Vietnam. Jerry wanted to be a Green Beret. And they said, "Well, you're just not cut out for it. That's not going to work out." So they said, "How'd you like to go to dog handling school?" And Jerry's like, "I really don't know a whole lot about dogs, but, you know, that sounds kind of interesting." So Jerry became a dog handler. And it was his job in Vietnam to wait for it. Wait. He led the Green Beret in. So he would do the point work for some of the units that he wasn't good enough to be in. And he liked to tell people, he used to joke, "I wasn't good enough to be a Green Beret, but I was good enough to lead them." So this narrative is about Jerry and his dog, Rebel, and their experiences in Vietnam. And it's absolutely fascinating. I had no idea. You know, you hear the history. Dog handlers, now I don't know about now, but then, and I suspect now is not too different than that. When they were in the jungle, when they were in the field, the dog handlers, although they had a weapon, they very rarely... It had to be a really bad firefight for them to be involved in it, because they had someone who followed them, and that position was called shotgun. So Jerry had his own bodyguard, because all he was supposed to do was watch the dog. So they'd go into the jungle, and he was supposed to watch the dog full time. His job was not to look for bad guys. That was Rebel's job. So the dog would indicate that he thought there was an ambush or a weapons cache or whatever you want. And I remember interviewing Jerry and him saying that Ranger was the smartest animal he had ever seen in his life. And he said, Bo, I know you're going to think I'm crazy. I know you're going to think I'm insane when I tell you this, but I'm telling you the dog could talk to me. I don't mean he said words. I mean he could communicate with me with a great deal of specificity. And he said, I was in Vietnam with Ranger for 6 months before I really knew what I was doing. And he said, I can remember the day I gave the dog a command, and he said, Ranger turned around and looked at me, and he said, it was if the dog said, finally, finally, Jerry, I've trained you, and you know what you're doing now. This story is about the firefights that they got involved with, how they, you know, Ranger saved, I don't know how many people's lives, because he would indicate to them that there was an ambush waiting. And toward the end of Jerry's tour, you know, his year was up and he wanted to come home. And the dog, you know, he would, only the dog handler could be with the dog. You could not walk up and, it's not a dog to pet. And Jerry said when he had him on his harness, you know, his choke chain, he was fine. Once he put that harness on, he was going to work. And he said, no one, he said, my commanding officer couldn't approach me if that dog wasn't on a choke chain because he'd tear him to pieces. It didn't matter. He didn't care what uniform you were. You weren't Jerry. And they would come back every couple of months because the dogs would literally work themselves to death. The dogs don't eat until you tell them they can eat. And they're wearing body armor, and it's hot in the jungle, and every couple of months they take them back and let the veterinarians go through them, go through their hair, go, you know, work on their feet, give them a time, give them vitamins and try to rest them up. And they have tags in their ears, like dog tags, except they're in their ears, and they've got numbers or whatever stitched in their ears to identify the dog, just like a dog tag for the soldiers, because the dogs often get killed in combat and they keep up with them, just like everything else in the Army. If it's got a number, if it's assigned to something, somebody has to account for it. Whether it's a tank or a pistol or a rifle or a dog, it's got to be accounted for. So he came up with this idea to ask his officer to lie and say that he got killed in combat. The dog, not Jerry, the dog. And he went to the vet tech to convince him to cut the tag out of his ear so you couldn't identify him. And Jerry decided to smuggle Ranger home. And I'll let readers read about that experience. But yeah, it was phenomenal to listen, you know, for your older audience. Lassie has got nothing on Ranger.
Yeah.
So,
okay, we're running quite a story of that. Yeah. We're running short here on time, but I want to see if we can squeeze one more in, Walter Carey.
Yeah.
He's one of, yeah. Tell us about Walter.
Walt was a close personal friend of mine for many, many, many years. Walt served in the United States Army for a year as a forward observer in Korea. And he spent a year in Korea, and his job was to be on the very, very front lines. And when an incoming mortar round came in, his job was to mathematically re-engineer how to return fire. He was a forward observer, and he served about 10 months on the front lines. And I go into great detail what that was like in the book. And he's a native Virginian. He came back to Front Royal, and he was in bad shape, drank all the time. As a matter of fact, in the book you'll read about how in his day they had flush toilets where they pulled the, like the little chain on the wall, had a flush chamber up on the above where the commode would normally be, up on the wall. And what Walt would do is he would smuggle whiskey bottles under his jacket into the restaurants in town, go into the bathroom, lock the door, then stand up on the commode and drop the whiskey bottle into the flush tank. And he did that in about nine different restaurants in town. So no matter where he was, any day of the week, he could go into any restaurant, use the bathroom, and get a drink because he put the whiskey bottle there and nobody else knew about it.
Oh, gee.
And that's how bad things were for him. And he got a letter asking him, "Hey, have you recently gotten married? Have you started college?" And he's like, "Man, I'm not liking these questions." So he drives into D.C., goes to the Army office and says, "Look, I got this letter. What's the deal?" "Oh, you're going back." He said, "Oh, no, I'm not going back. I did my time. I got my points. I was on the front line. I did everything everybody asked me to do. I'm not going back." "Oh, yeah, you are. You're going back because we don't have enough of your MOS." And Walt said, "No, I'm not going back. I have fulfilled the Army's requirements." And the sergeant said, "Well, the Army can change its mind." And Walt's like, "I don't know what to do. I can't take it because of what I saw and what I had to do." And he said, "How do I get out of this?" He said, "Well, the only thing you can do is join the military." He said, "What are you talking about? I'm in the Army. I didn't name a god. Am I going to join the military?" He said, "Wrong branch." And he said, "Bo, I walked across the hall, and an hour and a half later, I was sworn into the United States Navy."
Oh, God.
And Walter Carey served 29 years in the Navy. And when he retired, he was the Command Master Chief of the USS Forrestal, which was an aircraft carrier. There are 3,500 people on that aircraft carrier, and the only supervisor he had was the captain. So I met Walt at a show, a fly fishing show, because he made popping bucks. And his sense of relief and therapy in the Navy, in his military career, he made popping bugs because he was working part-time as a bartender when he was in a low-rank enlisted guy in the officers' club. And he noticed he was throwing all these cork champagne bottle corks away. And he thought, "You know what? We're just throwing a bunch of stuff away. I bet I can make something out of that." So he started taking the cork out of champagne bottles and fashioning them into popping bugs. And then he started painting them with leftover ship's paint. And the next thing he knew, his popping bugs were selling all over the country. And when Walt was at the height of his career, I'd say it's probably in his late 60s, early 70s, he was probably selling more than 1,000 dozen hand-tied popping bugs. Now, what made his bugs unique was he would take the cork body, fill it in with putty, and sand it. And that cork body got a coat of primer, five coats of paint, and then a coat of sealer. So every popping bug had seven coats. Seven. They're practically indestructible. And whatever he tied sold. And I spent a great deal of time with Walt talking to him about what it was like to be in Korea. And the moving thing is, whether it was Brian Mancini or whether it was Alvin Schell or Jessica or Walt Carey who served in Vietnam, once they started telling you their story, you could see them go back into time. And you could tell 50 years later, Walt was still hurting and
Yeah.
still struggled with some of the things that he saw and that he
Right.
had to do. And being able to talk about fly fishing and teach other veterans how to tie flies was as good a therapy for him as it was for them. And I was honored, very honored, by his family when Walt passed. His daughter called me and invited me to the funeral, and I walked with the family to bury him at Arlington National Cemetery. And Walt was a great guy and is just an example of the silent soldier, sailor, airman, and marine that'll never be in a museum. They'll never see a monument. There'll never be a statue. But without people like Walt Carey and Jessica and Alvin Schell and Jerry Myron, there would be no U.S.
Right.
You're not protected by your congressman. Your senator's not standing at a post somewhere. There's no, your local congressman is probably not. Now, to be honest, there are some that serve. Don't get me wrong. There are some that have served, and there are a few that, you know, I think Senator Cotton, as a matter of fact, he might still be active duty reservist. But it's the average American that serves in the military that keeps us free. I saw a bumper sticker one time, Roger. I'm not a big bumper sticker guy, but I saw a bumper sticker one time when I was a kid. I never forgot. And the bumper sticker said, "Sleep well tonight because your United States Air Force won't."
Yeah.
And that really struck me. It never occurred to me somebody's always on duty.
That's right.
Always.
That's right.
They don't ever close. They don't ever close. Right? They don't ever close.
Well, thank you so much for writing this book and documenting these stories. And I mean, we just hardly even broke the ice tonight on all the stories and the depth of the stories that you've written about. But thank you so much for doing that. Couple of ending things. Ray Rios in Ruidoso, New Mexico wrote, and you kind of talked about this before, but I want to kind of end with this because there may be people that want to help out. He says, "I'm aware there's a chapter in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I reside in Ruidoso, New Mexico, which is 3 hours away. Are there any reps or any way for me to get involved in my local area?" He says, "USMC infantrymen, 100% service connected." So again, can you remind people of how they might want to help out?
I would go directly to Project Healing Waters website. And they have a way for you to contact them. That's exactly what I would do. Contact them directly and send them an email or call them on the phone. But just go to the website and it should tell you the places closest to you. And what I would say is I'm sure there's an email link there, and I would send them an email and say, "This is who I am. This is where I live. Where's the closest program to my home?" And somebody will follow up with you. And worst case scenario, they can always reach out to me, and then I can reach out to somebody if I have to.
Okay.
But the book, you know, the title is Healing Waters, Veteran Stories of Recovery in Their Own Words. And that kind of sums it up, right? I probably ended up having 7 or 8 people drop out at the last minute because it was just too personal. And I had one of them contact me and say, "Look, my therapist thinks this would not be a good idea for me right now." And you have to honor that. I had one that I was at Blue Line, which means it's a editorial term that means we're getting ready to go to print. And you were at the final, final, final end. Everything's been written. The pictures are in and the captions have been written. And he sent me an email that said, "Bo, I just went to work for an organization that doesn't exist. You have to take me out of your book. I cannot take PR. I'm like, okay. And it was a phenomenal narrative.
Yeah,
phenomenal narrative. You know, about a soldier in the 10th Mountain Division. So these are all real people, and you can see their pictures and read their stories and just know that you just have to understand this. Although I've had a couple of people tell me they sat down and read the book beginning to end. I've had two or three people tell me that. That's very rare. Most people read one chapter and they got to put it down for a little while. So there's no order to it other than the first chapter is about my friend Robert Bartlett, which was the very first person to officially enter Project Healing Waters. And the last program, the last chapter is called Coming Home. And it's about Harmon's Cabins in West Virginia, where the National Regional Capital people get together once a year. Matter of fact, that's coming up this weekend. And other than that, so there's no order that you have to go in. I would just encourage you to get the book. You can contact Project Healing Waters headquarters and see if you can get one from them. If not, they can, you know, purchase one through my website. and I'll be glad to sign it and ship it out to them.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, unfortunately, we've got to wrap things up. We're over time already, but hang with me a few more minutes here, Bo, so we can give away your book and a couple other prizes here, and we'll close it out tonight. So bear with me for a few more minutes. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show. This is "What did you think of the show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners are randomly selected from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on some of these great prizes we have to offer. Now, if you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show to collect your information so that we can deliver your prize. So the first thing we're giving away is a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org. flyfishersinternational.org. Again, a great organization to support. Check them out and join if you don't win tonight. So our winner for that is going to be Jay Rios, who wrote in that question at the end that we read. So Jay, congratulations, and thanks for listening and playing along. I'm sure you'll enjoy your membership. Now we'll give away a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. And to learn more about Trout Unlimited, go to tu.org. Again, tu.org for Trout Unlimited, another great organization to support. Our winner for that is Mike Kalinowski. Mike Kalinowski in Virginia. So, Mike, congratulations on that. And I'm sure you'll enjoy your membership with Trout Unlimited. Now, we're going to give away a copy of Bo's latest book, Healing Waters, courtesy of Bo and his publisher. And let's see here. Let's see if this is going to be too hard. I don't know. Never know until I try. Tell me the name of the man who is credited with starting Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing Organization. The name of the man that started that. So, I don't know. We'll see, Bo. Now, we got to give him a little time here because there's a little delay before they hear the question, and then they have to type in their answer. So, but we'll give him a minute here. See if this one's too hard or not.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful program tonight. And I've really enjoyed interacting with the people who sent in questions. And I appreciate all the men and women and that serve in uniform, and I always tell them the same thing. I never miss a chance to vote because of men and women like you. And the other thing I tell them is the only reason we're not speaking German, Japanese, or some form of Arabic is because their brothers and sisters are sleeping in Arlington. That's the only reason. That and the grace of God. And I don't take it for granted, and I really appreciate their service and their sacrifice.
Well, it looks like we have a winner here. If Ed Nicholson is the right answer, is that the right answer?
That is. That is the right answer.
Kathy Williams in Minster, Ohio is our winner tonight. Kathy Williams. So,
congratulations, Kathy.
Yeah. So, Kathy, if you'll, I've got your email here. If you'll send me your shipping address, then I will send that on to Bo, and he'll get you your book, Healing Waters, sent out to you. Thanks for playing and paying attention. And we have some other winners in here, Bob Younger, Phil McCartney. Thanks for playing and paying attention, too. So great to have you all in the audience tonight. And thank you, too, Bo. Again, I'm so happy that you joined us here tonight and shared your stories and your experiences. And I hope everybody got something out of it. I don't see how they couldn't. But thanks for being here tonight.
Time just flew by. I couldn't believe it that went so quickly. Thank you so much, Roger, for having
Sure.
me on your show. I really enjoyed being with you and your listeners tonight, and I look forward to coming back to perhaps a different kind of program in the future.
Yeah, I think you have another book we might want to go over, so I'll talk to you later about
Well, that sounds
that.
good. Well, anybody that wants any follow-up information about the Virginia Fly Fishing and Wine Festival, they can just go to vaflyfishingfestival.com or go to my website about my books. It's Beau Beasley, BeauBeasley.com, and order a book or drop me an email, and I'll be glad to follow up with you.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thanks, Bo. Well, hopefully you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line menu. In the archive, you'll find all of our past shows, over 420-some shows now. And you can search by keyword, keyword phrase, whatever you're looking for. I know you'll find something of interest there for you. Our next broadcast will be on December 18th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On that show, we'll interview Bart Lombardo, and our show is called Passionate About Panfish. Bart is a professional guide in New Jersey, is passionate about panfish. Catch the excitement. Join us to learn the best tactics to hook these lively fish, from selecting the right flies to mastering the presentation. Bart shares his top secrets from years of experience. So to make sure you're there, be sure to add this to the upcoming show to your calendar. Right there on our homepage, below Bart's photograph, you'll see Add to Calendar. Click on that and add it to your calendar. You'll be all set. I'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, and Ugly Bug Fly Shop for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing. Welcome.